Hello, my name is Liv and welcome to Ethics of Archaeology. I'm your host and I'm joined today by three guests.
I'm Declan Keefe and I'm an archaeologist.
I'm Amanda Denny and I'm a classical historian.
I'm Jacob Mihalevi and I'm a religious historian.
Today we'll be discussing the history and effects of the acquisition and destruction of neighborhoods around the Agora by the American School of Classical Studies at Athens, or the ASCSA. As some background for those who aren't familiar with the subject, from 1931 to 1939, the Versace neighborhood was destroyed so that ASCSA could excavate the Agora. The Agora was of great importance to the ancient Athenians. It was a central public space where people hung out, conducted business, and discussed politics. In 1833, King Otto of Greece decided to excavate the entire area around the Agora, but this plan was not carried out. Instead, it was decided to excavate only the Versace neighborhood. The Versace neighborhood, whose name literally translates to fountain, was located at the foot of the Athenian Acropolis and was a central neighborhood. During this period of acquisition and destruction, over 5,000 people were relocated, and 348 plots and 600 buildings were destroyed. The neighborhood's stores, coffee shops, factories, and refugee communities disappeared. Up first, we have archaeologist Declan. Can you tell us a little about what the Agora meant in antiquity?
Sure. So in antiquity, the Agora had many different kinds of uses, but it was definitely one of the central spaces in Athens. So there was ritual practice in the Agora, including multiple different types of shrines to different gods, and then also altars that were just kind of scattered about. And then so one of the examples that I have here is the temple to Apollo Patroclus, which means Apollo from the fathers, because he is the founder of the Ionian race, according to Greek myth. And this space was meant for Athenians to come and worship, and they could come for a whole variety of reasons, including if they needed any favors from the gods, if they wanted to thank the gods for good fortune, or basically any type of religious need. There was also a very important altar of the 12 gods, which historians believe is most likely the dedicated to the 12 Olympian gods, which are depicted on the east frieze of the Parthenon. And those gods are Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, Demeter, Apollo, Artemis, Hephaestus, Athena, Ares, Aphrodite, Hermes, and Dionysus. And Xenophon actually tells us that there would be dedications to the 12 in the Agora during the city Dionysia. So aside from the ritual practice that occurs in the Agora, there is also a large civic role. So basically, almost all of the governmental activities would occur in the Agora. So structures like the Bulaterion would facilitate these matters. They would meet and discuss politics and discuss any kind of new laws or anything that you can imagine, basically. And also, these spaces are entangled with the religious space. These government buildings are within the temenos, which means that it's in this space that has been deemed sacred. So that's pretty interesting. And then also the stoas were in this temenos as well, and this space was for everyday citizens to hang out, and some people could sell wares, and people could, recite poetry, or politicians could give their pitch on why you should vote for them, or, any kind of stuff like that, political matters, or, basically any kind of matter could happen in the Stoa, and the whole Athenian public could gather there. Also, there were the Athenian Agora was pretty famous for its marble workers. So the Agora was a center for marble object production and sale. Phidias, who we know from making the cult statue of Zeus at Olympia, which is that pretty gargantuan, I think it's an ivory statue, actually. It's ivory and gold. And he's the one who is attributed to that statue. But he also has his workshop based in the Agora, where he made marble objects and also sold marble objects. There are also other marble workers, but that's sort of the one that we think about. Also, women had a role in the Agra. Surprise.
Wow.
So there were innkeepers that were sort of near the Agra and would service people who wanted to visit the Agra and didn't have anywhere to stay. And so that could be basically people from within the jurisdiction of Athens, like if you're coming from Sunion or some other place where you're still considered part of the polis, you could come and stay at these inns, which were mostly run by women. And also they could sell goods in the Agra that would probably be in the stoas. They would sell fruits, clothes, perfume, basically any of these kind of like more feminine, femininely attributed goods. Yeah. Any questions, you guys?
No, that was great.
I think you covered it. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Can you also tell us a little bit about what the Agra meant to 19th and 20th century archaeologists and why they wanted to uncover it?
Yeah, so the excavations, as we know, were done by the ASCSA, and those were started, as you said, in 1931, and they actually still continue today. So you could, if you wanted to, sign up as a volunteer and go contribute to these excavations now. But archaeologists were interested in finding artifacts. They wanted to learn about the past, and they were looking to uncover ancient structures. And also turned that Versace neighborhood into an archaeological park, which they did. And all of the artifacts that they found are housed in the museum, which resides in the Stoa of Attalos. So they converted this old Stoa into a big storage space and then eventually into the museum that now you can enter. They also wanted to expand knowledge, like general scholarship and knowledge of ancient Athenian life and culture, which at that point was a lot less than what we have now. And they wanted to know specifically like the origins and the operation of democracy, since the since civic life in the Agra was so important and sort of like, I would say even the Agra as the center of civic activity in ancient Athens. So they found some like public documents that were inscribed on stone, some like weight and measurement standards for the ancient Greeks, because obviously we don't use those same kind of metrics, and also some like juror identification tickets and ballots, which is pretty interesting. Like they had a very similar governmental structure as we know, because we both call it democracy.
Yes.
And also some items which reflect like the administrative nature of the site, you know, having all of these types of like documents that are inscribed on the stone. There are also some traces of like private dwellings in the area that like are just outside the Temenos, bordering the Agra. And you can find, or there were ancient like household pottery and other like small personal items, which can be used to help expand what we know about everyday life for ancient Athenian citizens, which is pretty interesting. And so the Agra of the 5th and 4th centuries BC has been like the main focus of the archaeologists that are excavating, but obviously there were other objects found from much earlier dates, but then also there are actually some items from like 18th, 19th, and 20th century like basements, like people's homes, like modern people had some objects sort of like deposited in that area as well.
Wow.
Which they found, and obviously they could tell that they weren't ancient objects.
Yeah.
And also I found this super interesting. I found that Rockefeller, like as in the big Monopoly guy,
yeah.
He funded the excavation when it started, which I just sort of thought, this is just my opinion, I thought it was like super, I don't know, kind of fishy that like this guy who has all this power is like the sole one that's funding, you know, this excavation. It kind of reminded me of like Mussolini's program in Rome to destroy the area in the Campus Martius to excavate the Mausoleum of Augustus, the Areopagus, and the Horologium of Augustus, because they had these sort of ulterior motives of displacing people that they deemed sort of like low class or like unworthy in comparison to what they were living on top of.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Thank you. So next we have historians Amanda and Jacob. Can you tell us about how religious spaces have evolved in the Agora?
Yeah, for sure. So there are a lot of religious spaces in both classical Athens and modern Athens that overlap. Obviously, there were, Declan touched on a lot of the buildings that were replaced over time, but there are also some specific spaces that have retained their religious significance across time, and I find that really fascinating. So one example of that is the Temple of Hephaestus in the Athenian Agora, which started as an ancient Greek temple, but then later in the 7th century CE, it became a Christian church dedicated to St. George, and it stayed that way until 1833, and then it became a museum, and the ASCSA actually did excavate the interior of it later. But I just found it really interesting that that religious space to the Greek gods and the Athenian gods then became a Christian religious space later.
I researched more the Church of the Holy Apostles. It's the oldest Christian church in Athens. It was built on the southeast side of the Agora. It's over 1,000 years old, and it's a mid-Byzantine temple of great historical value. And the architecture has a combination of cruciforms and square columns. It suffered many disasters over the centuries, as did many religious monuments in Athens. However, in 1877, the temple was repaired and extended. In 1954, the Ministry of Culture decided to demolish all the newer buildings to restore the church. Oh, yeah, and the American Archaeological School helped with that restoration between 1954 and 1956. The church has actually been modified 4 times, with wall paintings dating back to the 17th century that were revealed beneath whitewashed walls of its last incarnation. And based on what we know about the church, it's definitely an important historical site for the Athenian Agora. The church is home to both a lot of knowledge and a lot of mysteries. For example, we don't know why the church is known as the Holy Apostles of Souloki, which is its official title. We theorize that it refers to either the surrounding population or to our family that commissioned the church's renovation. And we don't know why the church was constructed in the Agora, in the middle of the Agora in the first place. And of course, we know the stories of the people who visited the church, who they were, why they went there. But it's definitely a place that intrigues a lot of people. And it is one of the only 2 monuments in the ancient Agora that remained intact.
Wow.
The other being the even older Temple of Hephaestus, which
yeah.
you talked about. It's also a beautiful example of pre-Reformation diversity within Christianity. Because it's kind of like a blend of Greek and Christianity together. And it has an altar and a floor made of marble and a dome supported by strong pillars. And it's simple and stunning. And the church just does a really good job of, like I said, blending the Christian and Greek aspects of both religions.
That's fascinating. So there's another church in the Agora, and actually in the, I believe, the Vrsaki neighborhood that's the topic of this episode, which it's called the Church of Lasaru, and it was one of the buildings destroyed in 1931 during the ASCSA excavations. But it has a marble piece that is built into a wall of the church that is believed to be a horos, or a marker for the boundary for the temenos of a sanctuary. And I thought that was really interesting, that even though the horos probably came from a different area, it ended up being built into and becoming part of this later Christian religious space. And it just shows that the religious spaces in ancient Greece carried over in a lot of different ways to the religious spaces in modern Athens.
Yeah, thank you. So going off of what Declan was talking about with ethics and potentially being like,
all of the funding is from Rockefeller, which that's why I was fishy, because I was just thinking, like, you know, he probably had the power. I mean, there's this kind of information isn't like readily available because nobody wants you to know. But I feel like, you know, historically, we've seen this happen with these types of projects that are funded by solely like one person or one organization, that they have the power to like influence the excavation. So I feel like maybe it's possible that Rockefeller had this power to influence the excavations and sort of like twist it to his advantage. I don't know if he had any reason to want to kick out these people. But you know, you see it with like I said, Mussolini, these people who have this power and the money, they think that they're sort of above everyone else, and they're legitimized
by the past.
Yeah. Exactly. Like they look at like Greece and Rome, and they say, oh, these are the origins of white culture. These are the origins of like what I am. Like
that's what we're trying to get back to.
Yeah. Like that's why I have power. That's why I have money. And so he's doing these excavations and kicking these people out because he wants to sort of prove to the world that like I'm the man, like I'm the one.
Like that we are that like fantastic past that we've like put on a pedestal. That's us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not these random people living in this random neighborhood. But then you're destroying a whole group of people in their homes because of that ideal that you're trying to find out of the past.
Right. Yeah. And it's also interesting, going off of that, just the information that we get is from the ASCSA. Like,
that's so true.
Yes, yeah. that Horos that I was talking about, that's where I got it. I got it from an ASCSA document because that's where you learn things.
Yeah.
They are the ones that know these things that we learn. They are who we learn from, and yet there are a lot of things that they were willing to sacrifice to get there.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to hear from some of the people who were relocated and not just from the ASCSA about what they found.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, the information I had didn't, like, directly reference the ASCA, but I'm sure with their power and influence, they somehow managed to influence the information.
I mean, it's kind of hard to get away from the ASCSA just because, like, all of these different sources, although unaffiliated, they are using the information from the ASCSA because they're the ones who did the excavations. Like, they alone were in charge, and they still are in charge of the excavation. So, you know, the objects that they're excavating and, sort of like the jurisdiction over anything found within that space is sort of up to them to decide, like, how the information is doled out.
Yeah, because also when you are excavating an area, like, the only way to get the full picture is if you take into account the context of, like, the area that you found all of these objects and all of these artifacts. And so the ASCSA is literally, by being the people who found things first, they have that information, and everybody else just kind of has to learn it from them.
Right.
And that makes them very powerful, sometimes to a detriment.
Yeah, there's a lot about that, but there are definitely some people who criticize them. Like, there was this one Athenian architect, and he said that the archaeologists, blinded by the glow of the wonder of the ancient world, have the opinion that this period belongs to the climax of civilization, while the subsequent periods, the ones meant to be sacrificed, belong to an infinitely inferior level of civilization.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Speaking the truth.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the opinion that this was really an unethical thing, but some people are still arguing that what they're finding there is more important than the people that they're displacing.
Yeah, I found a source that said that to uncover the Agora, it was necessary to demolish 400 modern buildings, which is
crazy.
A word choice. Yeah, that's like the fact that people who are, you know, unaffiliated with the ASCSA, obviously the ASCSA would say these things, but then you have people just fully believing that knowing about the ancient Agora and beyond is actively more important than the people living on that land.
Yeah.
I agree, but also it's kind of tricky because...
It is, yeah.
Because, you know, these people are important and, you know, they live there and that's important to sort of take into consideration. But also, if you know that, like, this sort of hub of the ancient city is underground under all these buildings, it's really tough, I think, to, like, decide what to do with that information because you can learn a lot, and I think it's really important to learn a lot about the past. But I think the problem with the ASCSA and, you know, the funding from Rockefeller mm-hmm. is that they're using antiquity, like, as a weapon.
Yes.
To attack the people living there and also to, you know, to the people who aren't living there, show that, like, this is why I have power. Like, these are, like, the people that we're basing everything on. So, I don't know. I think it's kind of difficult to say, like, what should they have done. Obviously, I don't think they did the right thing. But... I don't know. I feel like there probably could have been some kind of solution where you aren't displacing, how many was it? 5,000 people?
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to do that. Maybe, like, constructing a new neighborhood and offering housing to those people there, or, you know, somehow finding a way to work around it. Like, I don't know if every single, like, square inch of space is being used by these buildings. Like, I don't know if it was really necessary to demolish how many 400 buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably some kind of compromise that could be made where you're still preserving, you know, I mean, now to us, it's kind of history, the Versace neighborhood, because, you know, it's obviously in the past. And, you know, as time goes by, it'll become more and more important to understand that portion of the past.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's too bad that sort of it all gets erased.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's obviously a more complex discussion than just, we don't need to learn about the past, but it does feel like there was definitely a way to go about it that was not, you guys have to leave, and we're going to destroy everything in our path.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like there should have been a lot more communication between the ASCSA and the citizens in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I don't know if it would have solved it, but, like, I feel like it would have been, like, a good first step or something. But also, yeah, like, of course history is important. Like, no one is arguing against that. But I feel like there should come a stopping point when it's, like, interfering and ruining the lives of just people just trying to live their life.
Yeah, there were definitely some people who were not involved in that decision to destroy Versace who should have been.
Thank you guys for joining us today on Ethics of Archaeology. This has been great. It's been great having you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
No problem.
Of course. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.